are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
All right, family, it's time for us to get into our mental health chat, and we're continuing on with our lesson on PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And so we're going to be joined in just a moment by Juan Royf from the Vista Clinic, and he's going to be talking to us about how PTSD impacts relationships. So PTSD doesn't just affect the person who has it, right? It also ripples through their relationships, sometimes creating emotional distance and misunderstandings. So today we want to look at how PTSD actually impacts personal connections and how loved ones can navigate some of the challenges that come about because of PTSD. And so Juan Royf joins us on the line. Juan, good morning and welcome back to the Mid-Morning Empowerment.
Hi, good morning. How are you doing today?
Doing all right. Thank you so much. And we're so grateful that you've chosen to join us once more for another lesson on how PTSD impacts our lives today, focusing specifically on relationships. So let's get right into it. How does PTSD actually affect communication in relationships?
There's a couple of ways. I'm just going to list them and then we'll talk about them briefly because there's actually quite a lot.
Okay.
There's sometimes difficulty expressing emotions, avoidance, anger, irritability, trust issues, hypervigilance, which I'll explain in a minute, and then guilt and shame. So we can quickly touch on each of them. You know, with PTSD, a lot of people with PTSD, as is sometimes actually just common, people struggle to talk about their feelings. Particular to PTSD, there's the numbness, the anxiety, the fear. And not being able to talk about it causes a buildup, and that sometimes causes a bit of an explosion. And as you can imagine, that can cause problems in relationships.
Right.
The avoidance of actually talking sometimes looks to your partner like you don't want to, or you're not interested. But what the person with PTSD is actually doing is they're trying to process everything and all that's going on in their head. What happens with a lot of people with PTSD is they show what looks like irritability and or anger.
Okay.
But it really is it's something completely different. It's trying to cope. It's trying to process. But to my partner, it looks like I'm angry at them or I'm annoyed with them. Or I feel unpredictable, and of course that can cause distance. People who have experienced trauma, again, as we know, that's where PTSD comes from, might become a trust issue with the person experiencing PTSD. So it becomes difficult to trust what my partner says, what my partner is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can imagine, that's one of the, I won't say most prominent aspect of PTSD is hypervigilance. Now, what hypervigilance means is that I'm basically always on edge. I'm always on high alert.
All right.
I'm always looking for danger. And so for some people, it may feel and seem odd, but it becomes an annoyance.
Yeah.
Always saying, look out for this, look out for that. Have you thought about this? And people sometimes are like, can you just relax?
Yes,
and the answer is no, not. And then, of course, there's guilt and shame, which is part and parcel for a lot of people with psychiatric disorders. And that guilt and shame essentially leads to people isolating, not talking, and sometimes just plain straightforward lying. Are you okay? Yes, I'm fine. Then why do you look the way you do? No, man, I said I'm fine. You know, that kind of thing. And as I say, you can imagine the repercussions of what happens there in a relationship.
Yeah, yeah. And so when you're talking about the hypervigilance, I wonder, does someone who has PTSD recognize that this is a bit much? Or is that just their natural state because of the PTSD? Are they able to tell that I'm going a little bit far, or this is just, no, there is actually danger that I have to be aware of? Can they tell the difference?
They can usually cognitively tell themselves, you know what, I'm possibly overdoing it. But it almost becomes a sense of, this is my good space. As long as I know where the dangers are, or at least expect where the dangers are, then I can be slightly more calm. I say that very tongue-in-cheek. And it, so it becomes a way of living, a way of where I feel comfortable.
Yeah.
So although they might recognize it, they still, I almost want to say, need it. You know, I mentioned this in a previous session, where you get people that make fun of it, where you have a person that says, I can't sit with my back to the door.
Yes.
And they're like, oh, tough guy, tough guy. No, it's not a matter of tough guy. It's if I sit with my back to the door, my anxiety climbs and climbs and climbs because I'm having all kinds of weird and wonderful imaginations going on. What's going to happen? Yeah, exactly.
All right. Sure. Okay. So why do people with PTSD sometimes push their loved ones away?
You know, it ties in with what we just talked about. And there's the fear of being hurt. Mm-hmm. Depending on where their hurt came from originally, we must remember that trauma is an interesting thing. And I don't want to elaborate too much, but the brain treats emotional and physical pain exactly the same. In a nutshell, the brain says, I've been hurt. I don't care where it came from, but I don't want to do it again. So if I've been hurt by a partner cheating or a relationship where I was stabbed in the back, then I am going to be very careful as to who I'm trusting and who I'm going to allow in, so to speak. And so that fear of being hurt again might cause me to have people at arm's length.
Yes.
And as you can imagine, relationship, that's not great.
Yeah.
What happens again, this is not only owned to PTSD, but happens to a fair amount of people experiencing psychiatric disorders, is I'm the problem. I'm the burden. I am in the way. My issues and my quirks, if I can call them that, or my symptoms are too much, and I'm in the way, and I'm a burden on the family, and I'd rather just withdraw. We've spoken about the trust issue. The overwhelming state that people with PTSD find themselves in trying to deal with your triggers, and as we've talked about before, they experience a lot of flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And basically they try to deal with that. And so they will rather go and sit on the earth and be alone.
Yeah.
And then the partner says as a, you don't want to be with me. And it feels like a push away, but it really isn't. And then, yeah, I've mentioned it already, but we're back to the shame and guilt. I don't want to talk about what happened. You know, in our country, especially if not around the world, we have this Cowboys Don't Cry story. And so especially among men, where, no, I'm fine, I'm good. To talk about anything, but it's so obvious that that person is going through something.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you a basic example of where this is perpetuated over and over and over. I'm sure you've had the unfortunate experience of having gone to a funeral.
Yes.
And so, do many of them. How many times at a funeral have you heard someone say to the person, be strong?
Yes.
Every funeral. Yeah. So what are you saying to that person? Be strong. Please don't show your emotions to anyone. Mm-hmm. Is essentially what you say. So what happens there? I take my emotions, I shove them down into the pit of my stomach and tell everybody that I'm fine.
I'm okay.
And 6 weeks later, whenever we're sitting with problems.
Sure. Wow. And then, well, yeah. Speaking about situations like that, what are some other common misunderstandings between PTSD sufferers and their partners? I know you've just talked about, you know, forcing in quotes to be strong. What are some of the other misunderstandings that might arise?
You know, the emotional distancing that I'm talking about, the shame and the guilt, they all kind of sort of filter back to one thing where a partner might feel, oh, they don't love me anymore. Why do you say that? No, well, you know, they never spend time with me. They're so closed off. They never talk. If ever I bring up something, they say two or three words, and then that's the end of it. And that goes hand in hand with another one, which is they're angry with me, or they don't want to talk to me. They're annoyed with me. That happens. They don't want to connect. What happens often, and this is unfortunately very owned to PTSD, you know, my partner is being overly dramatic, or they're overreacting. And, you know, that's plain, simple, a misunderstanding, a misperception of you are not understanding what that person's going through. That loud noise that just happened outside in the street, that person that they're seeing that they are overreacting and saying, lock the doors and be quiet for a moment and don't talk. They're not doing that to be dramatic. They're doing that because in their mind, they are back to the day where that loud bang happened.
Yes.
Hijacked or something like that. And then, you know, another one where there's misunderstandings, it's actually quite a big one, and it's more common than you might think. And it's not only between partners, it's friendships, it's at work, it sometimes happens where, shouldn't you be over this by now? This happened a year ago. Shouldn't you be better?
Hey.
That kind of, I say it like that because I can't tell you how many times I've heard it. And it's like, no, this doesn't just go away. That's a very common misperception where people are like, you know, this should be fine by now. You should be over this by now.
Yeah, like the clock has run out on this situation.
I'm thinking of a particular instance where I had a particular person saying, you know, my husband doesn't want to spend time. I really want to go out and have a good time and sit with friends and be at a braai, you know, that kind of thing. And they can't stay there for long. And the misunderstanding there was, it's not that they don't want to be there. It's sitting at that braai, what was happening with the husband, the experience that he had, basically all the elements of that braai, the fire, the people talking, the smell of the braai, if you can believe that. Constant triggers of something they went through. So they sort of buckled down and went to the braai and just couldn't stay for too long because they just literally became too overwhelmed.
Wow. So, that's incredible. I find it interesting that some of the different traumas that you've talked about, because I think maybe I'm just speaking for myself here, but when I all the time, every time I've thought of trauma, I've thought about experiences like maybe someone who's been in a war zone, someone who's witnessed maybe a vicious crime or been through something like that or has been abused in some way. But some of the things you're talking about, like, and I think you mentioned this in our first conversation, that, you know, one thing might affect one person one way, and the same thing to another person can be traumatic. So it's very interesting that, you know, whatever this incident might have been that, you know, where the memories are of the braai and the smell and all of that can be triggers. That's so incredible that anything can be something to someone.
Yeah, it's you know, it's interesting in the sense that it's really fascinating trauma because it might not be that something happened at that braai. I want to elaborate on that.
Right.
I'm creating the story now.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the braai that was the problem. It was what happened. Let's take a 10-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm.
Family braai, friends are there, everything's great, blah, blah, blah. And then as what is so frequent these days, a friend, family friend, or an uncle or a something, you know, did something bad.
Yeah.
After the braai. But the memory sequence ties all of that together. Now that person.
Exactly.
And now that person sits with it, the moment they smell a fire, that whole flood of memories come back. And the person sits there and is out of their mind scared.
Yeah.
And people are, what the hell are you? what is your problem?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Wow. So how then do family members and partners provide support without feeling overwhelmed?
I'm glad you asked this, because the first thing I want to say is it's a very big misconception. It's what's the difference between, or what is support? What does that word mean? Because a lot of people think support means I must now treat you like an absolute baby or an invalid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case. For the caring person, for the person doing the support, that's actually a very bad idea.
Okay.
Because they then kind of put their own lives on hold just to be at this person's beck and call because they think that's what they need. That's completely untrue. Support means I help you with what you need. So the first thing that you can do for a person that you know that is experiencing something is literally to say, what do you need? Not to take everything that John said on the radio this morning and try and force that on the person.
Mm.
That doesn't work. I had a call from a friend once. And they said, please come over. And I went there and I said, how can I help? And they said, sit here. And I was like, okay. And I sat there for, I think it was an hour. And at some point they looked up and they said, thank you very much. If you want to, you can go. That's all they needed. They wanted to have another human being. That's all they needed.
Okay.
So support means helping them with what they need, not forcing things on them that you think, you know, when you were little and your mom was cold and she told you to put on a jersey, that's not support.
Right.
So with that being said, that set very healthy boundaries for yourself.
Okay.
What can I do? Am I willing to do? What am I capable of? And don't cross those, because another very big aspect is you cannot forget to take care of yourself. And logically speaking, if you think about it for a second, is if you don't take care of yourself well enough, if you exhaust yourself, then you are of no use to that person.
Right.
So you need to take care of yourself, set those boundaries. If we can create a list, I want to say first and third on the list, you can decide which one is better for you,
okay,
is to educate yourself as much as humanly possible about whatever condition that person, we're talking about PTSD,
mm-hmm,
so educate yourself about PTSD as much as humanly possible, but please, for the love of everything that's good and well, do not necessarily depend on Dr. Google or Dr. AI for that matter.
Okay.
Try and speak to a professional. Try and read a book that is well researched. Try and listen to talks like this. If you can, there are community talks out there.
Mm-hmm.
Hear it from a decent source. A friend of mine the other day said, I won't say the actual, I tried a AI search engine.
Okay.
And what they spat was actually wrong. Luckily, they were a fairly specialized person in their field. They just wanted to get more information. And the thing that the AI gave them was really bad. So be careful of Dr. Google, I'd like to say. Encourage professional help. We can never force someone, but it's a good idea to encourage it. If you can and you have educated yourself, or perhaps you sat in on a session, try and remember doctor or counselor or whoever said, breathe. So let's do that breathing together, that kind of thing. And I'm just going to tie this bow by saying, it's not up to you to fix your partner.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It's for you. That differentiation between support and taking over. You mustn't take over. You mustn't fix. You must support.
Okay. I think that's the difficult part for a lot of people. We want to fix it. We want to have the solution. And even when you're talking about setting boundaries, that's very difficult for a lot of people, especially when it comes to my loved one. To set a boundary for my loved one who is in need. I must be there. I must fix it. I must have the answers. And that's such a challenge to say, no, I can't do it, and I'm not going to try to do it. This is as far as I can go.
Exactly. It comes from a good place. I care. I want to help. But again, it's be careful not to overburden yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sort of say, little bit later. That's no good to anybody.
Right, right. Now, are there any specific therapy approaches that help both the individual and their relationships?
Well, there's quite a few. There's cognitive behavior therapy, which is fairly common, but very effective, which in a nutshell is allows and helps the person to change unhelpful thoughts related to their trauma, to sort of re-envision, looking for a word which I can't find now, but to just reframe it. There we go. There's to reframe and to re-evaluate, you know, seeing, I'm quickly thinking of a person I saw many, many years ago. They were wrought with guilt, having, unfortunately, they hit a pedestrian. And they walked around as if they were, in their mind, they were the worst person on the planet. They were a mass murderer, if you like. And just to reframe that to saying, did you commit murder or was it truly an accident? You know, and I'm saying in context, this sounds quite terrible. Now don't say it out loud. But yeah, to reframe stuff like that, I find it often with grieving people, not necessarily PTSD, but, you know, I should have been there. I should have done this. I should have done that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, rationally, no, I was in Cape Town at the time. Okay, well, then how could you have been there? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's cognitive behavior therapy. There's cognitive processing therapy, which specifically focuses on changing negative beliefs, which is something very common, negative and irrational beliefs. Prolonged exposure therapy, which there, I just want to put a little bit of a warning label in that, please don't try exposure therapy on your own. You know, there's a very common expression, face your fears. Please do not face your fears. It's not a good idea.
Right.
What I'm talking about there, phobia, for example, of heights. What people in general seem to think is that, okay, I'm going to face my fear. I'm going to find the highest building I can and go and stand on top and look out.
Just expose what it might be.
Exactly. And that's a very, very bad idea because you are going to overwhelm yourself. It's too quick. It's too fast. Exposure therapy must please be done with a therapist and let that therapist guide you from a time perspective because it's a slow process. It is dependent on your progress, absolutely, but you do need that person to say, okay, we're only going to do this little bit today. So that, because what happens when we, you can think for yourself, when we start overcoming the fear, when we start sort of winning, if I can call it that, we get excited. And then we want to do more. And then we go too fast. So please don't do cognitive processing, exposure therapy on your own. There's a very good therapy called EMDR or eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, which is a mouthful. Basically, what that does is it processes traumatic memories in a new, disturbing way in a closed, safe environment. It's a very specialized method. There's a handful of people that can really, truly do it correctly. And that are qualified in it, but it's very effective as well. And then there's couple-specific therapy for PTSD. As you can imagine, that is to specifically help couples to understand PTSD, to learn how to communicate, and to basically rebuild trust. In a nutshell, those are the main therapies that one can look at. Of course, there's I'm talking about your cognitive therapies. There is medicinal intervention that is sometimes necessary. And then there are things that these are not necessarily therapies, but especially with anxiety disorders, which PTSD is, exercise is a very, very good idea. It gets rid of built-up tension. It gets rid of built-up muscle tension. And 30 days a minute. 30 days a minute. 30 minutes a day.
Right.
Actually quite sufficient, and then it helps us to get out of our heads, so to speak, as well. Diet is a good idea, and in general, and I say create a environment for yourself of general well-being. That will go a long way helping with PTSD.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much, Ron, for coming through one more time. And we'll be connecting with you again on Friday for another chat on PTSD. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Have a beautiful day.
Thank you. You too.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.